Well, for most of you, this is going to be a non-duality marathon today.
It's like
6 hours of hammering your heads where there's no one in there. I suppose most of you are old after Lisa hammering you for so long that there is no I in here and life's just happening. So that's clear, right? So I can go into non-duality a little bit about the basics for those who are new this evening, and maybe we can then focus more on the process of awakening. Like, once this is seen, then what happens in daily life? So mostly I don't talk about it because often I have audiences where I really need 2 hours to hammer the eye outside of the brain, which is impossible because there's no eye in there anyway. But metaphorically speaking. Well, let's just the simple explanation, and this is, I often give talks in companies, and I have to explain it to them as easy as possible, otherwise they will run. So, well, of course it's called non-duality, or as in India they say, Advaita. And this is really simple, because it simply means not to. It's a really clever way to put it, because they are pointing at the idea that everything is simply one. But what this oneness is, we just don't know. So therefore they say, we do not know what it is, but it is not to. This oneness, it has many names. Lisa often calls it aliveness, or in the Advaita or quantum mechanics they often say it is consciousness. Einstein said it's one energy, and in religion you often say this is Brahman or the Tao or God, or in science they call it also, I guess, Qi or Ki or the G-force or Akasha. Right? Anyway, there are so many names to point that the idea that simply one. Let's use energy as word, just a word. If this is the universe, everything in this universe, what this is pointing at, is made out of exactly the same stuff, let's say energy. Then we actually have four forms. And the first one is matter. Matter is simply energy that is having a form, a shape, like this thing. It's just energy having a certain shape. But also water, for instance. But if you ask the intelligent question, who is making the water flow? Then the answer is, no one! Very good. So the funny thing is that everything that is matter is simply energy with a form, is just happening. It's so easy. The second thing is what you call the plants and trees. So what can a plant do what this thing can't do? What's the difference between that?
It can grow.
It can grow. Another? Great. But who is making the plant grow?
Nobody.
It's just that. You are such a clever artist. Then? Then we have animals.
Cheater.
I was thinking you said, you cheater? How do you know? So anyway, animals. If we have, for instance, a dog, what can a dog do? Can this plant come to?
Sounding.
Woof, making noises.
Woof.
Woof, yeah. Also,
this is really
ready. Okay. So,
If we look at insects, they can also show emotions. If there is a bay, that's the word for it, right? That's what I mean. A mosquito, let's say mosquito. It's easy. If a mosquito is flying and I try to kill it and I hammer it, it may try to hit me, for instance. Mm. Then we say the mosquito is angry. But he isn't. Because they have no feelings. Only mammals have feelings, and all the other animals only have emotions. So they're more like a robot pretending to be angry while there's no feelings. But mammals also. Because they have no limbic system in the brain, and it's the limbic system that is creating our feelings. And only mammals have it. But who is doing or steering the mosquito? There's nobody. It's just energy with a form. The mosquito also can grow, just like a plant, but it also can move and be very annoying during the night. But there's no one in the mosquito, of course, who's doing that. It's also just that. To me, the extreme amazing thing is that if we combine these three elements of the universe, this must be altogether approximately like 99.99% of the whole universe. And we say, okay, 99.99% of the whole universe is just energy and it's just happening, but there are very special beings, we call them humans, and they think they are like this part of the universe, and they think that they are the doer. Suddenly we believe we are separate, that everything is just happening except us. It's really odd. Especially when you just look at we cannot even be here or live here without these first three forms. We can only be here when there is water, the air you breathe. You're not separate from the air you breathe. When you drink water, you're not separate from the water. We're not separate from the sunlight that's shining on us. Also, we need to eat. Without plants, there's no way we can live. So the interesting thing is, why does this creature think, as the only creature in this on this planet, that it is doing what it does, that it has free will? Yes, because our brain is fucking well. It is. Because it's, the last few couple of years, neuroscience has now figured out what's actually happening. And of course, the gurus from India couldn't know, but they were really pointing in the right direction. If this is your nose, then there are certain parts of the brain, so the temporal lobes, the medial prefrontal cortex, and there are two quarticles here, the precaneus, the gyrus singularis, as they call it. They call this system the fold network. And what's so amazing about this is that when you are 1.5 years old, for the first time, this default network starts to work and it's creating self-awareness.
Mm-hmm. At which hour?
Which 1.5 years old. Okay. If you have a child that is 1 year old, you put the child in front of a mirror, the child has no awareness that this is me. After 1.5 years, this part of the brain becomes active, creates an ego, as we could say, self-awareness, and it says, this is me. The reflection in the mirror is me. I don't know if you have children, but from that age, it's also my soccer ball. Before, it was just a soccer ball. So it starts to claim its toys, and this is me, it's mine. What's so funny about this system is when they put people under a brain scanner and they say, okay, listen to music. While you are listening to music, you're getting totally into the music, we could say, and the self-awareness is turned off. So there is awareness of the music, but there is no self-awareness. Once they stop the music and they say, what did you think of the music? Then it's getting turned on and it's creating a story about your opinion about the music. But when they ask people, were you constantly self-aware, were you constantly present as an I while listening to the music? And everyone says, yes. Which is impossible because there was no self-awareness at that time. So what it does, after everything we do, the self-awareness creates a story afterwards that it was you doing it. You're now doing this, it's just happening, and then this pops up, this is me doing it. And then the blah blah mind starts telling me why you are doing it, but you don't know. So, the reason we think we're separate and we think we are the doer is merely because the brain is making some kind of a magical trick, actually. So, a dog, for instance, has no self-awareness, but it has awareness. So if a dog sees a cat, it might run after the cat and try to catch it.
Excuse me, you say the dog has no self-awareness, but he has awareness.
Yeah, he has awareness.
Strange.
When a dog is chasing a cat and he sees the cat running into a tree, then the dog is aware of a cat and a tree. But it doesn't see itself in the third person as part of this whole thing happening. So therefore it won't go back and lay down and be like, oh, I missed again. What will the other dogs think of me? I need therapy. I'm not good at that. So it has no self-reflection afterwards as we have. Because if we chase a cat, we see ourselves being part of the scene that's going on. That's the difference.
They also did tests with chimpanzees. They recognize themselves in the mirror.
Yeah, there are chimpanzees, dolphins, elephants, gorillas, and I don't know the English word, exters, small birds. They are only creatures who have self-awareness, but they won't bother them as much because they don't have language as we have.
Lucky.
So they can't go like, oh, why? Also, the unconscious brain is doing every second, it's processing 11.2 million bits per second. This means that our brain is 10 million times faster than a computer. It's quite amazing. But we are only aware of 60 bits. Therefore, we have absolutely no idea why we do the things we do. I can ask you, why are you sitting right now the way you're sitting? Then you become aware of, oh, I'm sitting like this. And then these 60 bits, the blah blah mind, or I call it mostly Stefan Waldorf, they will come up with a lot of stories. So if something succeeds, these 60 bits will take all the credit. If something goes wrong, they will start blaming people. And we call it having a meeting in companies. it's blah blah. But we take these 60 bits so seriously that we really think that we're controlling the whole system. So what happens? Everything, let's say, is one. And when we are 1.5 years old, first thought appears, this is me. The first.
Can you use the red color?
I can.
How do you know when the thought appears? How can you measure that?
With this.
Yeah.
They can see, that's the age where a child recognizes itself in the mirror. First time. But this is the first time the self awareness kicks in.
So they were testing like kids like 1 year and then they're like 1 year, 4 months and then they're like,
hey. Yeah, you can try it with your own kid or your dog. Uh-huh. With your dog in front of the mirror. It's incredibly funny.
So before the kid is only aware. Just not self-aware. Before
no, child is only aware.
Only aware, like animals.
The first 2 months, the child sees itself as one with the mother. It's no separation at all.
Mm.
Then the first awareness of people around it starts to grow. So it recognizes the dad and the mom and the sister.
Mm-hmm.
So it's aware, but it doesn't see itself as part of this happening. And then, because we believe this thought to be true, and when we grow up, people also in school, they tell you that you have to be good enough. I see it with my son, he's 10 years old now, and he has to have the right shoes with the right brand, and it's really important what people in his clubs think of him. So this, the me looking for a way to be someone. But as we grow older, we often build some strategies around it. And I see this in companies a lot. Some people become really dominant. And some become really pleased. But this one thing, if I'm dominant, look at how strong I am and my power, and I can show everyone that I'm good enough. Actually, this is an eye who's really insecure and shows some compensating behavior. But they don't think that of themselves most. And this one, also in relationships, you see one is a little dominant or aggressive, and the other one becomes really pleasing. And they think, if I'm good enough for someone else, I'll be good enough. And but this is the first struggle, actually, that comes out of this idea that you are this pop. And the second one is the idea that you have to control everything. But you also have been on this planet for a while, and then you realize at a certain point that what you think you want or what you plan to do and what is actually happening, mostly two completely different books. And if things go differently from what we thought, and there are some people, they become frustrated. Because you think, I want my life to be like this, and now it's like this. A lot of thoughts about frustration. And if we look towards the future, we're mostly having a lot of fear for all things that might be happening in the future. All the doom scenarios. And if you think that you could have done things differently in the past, you feel a little guilty. Or you blame someone else, because you then also think that other people could have done things differently from what they did. And in companies, actually, they all agree on this, because they see all these games going on within their own department. People, all they are busy with their own self-image, showing that they're good enough. And mostly the directors wanting total control, and trying to do everything in Excel and to keep this control. But as this is happening, we often feel stress. And actually the suffering that comes up. Because on top of this, there are all these blah, 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 blah thoughts about how you should be and how life should be. And as this feels so horrible, we try to find techniques to get rid of that. And there are many. A popular one is to buy stuff. Which really works, because once you buy stuff, then a little endorphin comes up in the brain, and all the struggles for a while, it's like, such relief. But then, it's back, and you have to buy more stuff. And so, we've got this consuming society where we keep buying and buying and buying, trying to avoid actually this pain or struggle. You can also drink beer or eat chocolate. People with addictions or people using drugs, there are just methods of trying to get rid of the struggle you are experiencing. And in businesses, most people, they say, I need a career. Because they think, once this project is over, or once I am the director of this company, then it will be good enough. Mm-hmm. And then you are the director, the project is finished. And for a while, it's like... And actually, you end up really feeling so happy because we buy something or a project is finished. At the moment that happens, the desire drops away. So for a moment, there's this now is good enough for a while. And then, it's okay. And once this doesn't work, some people think, let's become spiritual. And then you start listening to vegetarian music. Having all kinds of methods again to try to be a better version of yourself, but actually it's still the same me who thinks there's something wrong with him, who wants to do something in order to find some peace somewhere in the box. And what's non-duality actually pointing to is that you can go in therapy and you can be busy with all these clouds forever and solve them one by one. But once it's seen that this first thought is actually merely a thought, that's it.
You forgot one thing. Some people think that they spend 15 euros extra in order to form the
It's true.
No, you're saying we have to buy stuff. We have to buy stuff.
Yeah, that's true. So, non-duality is really the direct way of liberation. The indirect is trying to get rid of clouds by clouds. And this way it's just seeing through the eye. But then the process of awakening starts, and all these clouds and all these old pains and stuff, they will come up. So we can talk about that some more. Because it's not like you see through it now. That would be great. But we have mostly got suppressed so much feelings and traumas and stuff that wants to come out. And also many old concepts during this process of awakening, they will not disappear instantly. They will come back and back. Any questions on this? So clear.
I would like to ask this drawing on maybe on your blog or something like this.
Yeah, I have it on my website actually.
Control it
for free. You don't have to buy stuff for it.
Yeah. But this is interesting. So.
I try to explain this way in companies, and actually, when I first did it, I was like, this is going to be my last performance ever. And people also were like, oh yeah, now we understand what happened. But it's funny that even the most identified, rational people do understand. In my latest book, it's almost finished, I'm writing about non-duality and love. Because what happens in relationships, we can talk about this for hours, but once two me's come together with all their clouds,
yeah,
no wonder we struggle so much. And because also, there could be another cloud, which I had here. And that cloud is called the perfect relationship. Yes. Then we think, once I've got the perfect girl or boy, and for a while that seems to be, because if someone comes to you, it will tell you you're good enough constantly. And it's like, oh, I'm good enough. And someone will tell you, I will live with you forever and we'll marry and stuff. So you have the idea that you have control. And suddenly it's like, wow, amazing. But then someone falls in love with someone else, or it cheats, and then, ouch. And then we start to blame, because we think he could have done it differently, women don't cheat. And then it comes again. So relationships are mostly used for the I to feel better about himself. Which is fine, then that is just happening, there's nothing wrong with it.
It is an illustration of the law of possession.
It is
simply? It is an illustration of the law of possession.
Yeah, you're really with action and reaction. Yeah, everything is action and reaction, but there are billions and billions of actions and reactions happening simultaneously at this moment. So therefore we have no idea why things are happening. It's one big mystery. Our 60 bits try to come up with stories so we can explain why things happen to us. But actually we don't know. Also me, I'm explaining this with my 60 bits a second. Everything I say is really not true. It's just a subjective point.
Why would the liberated people meet then? Say, for example, if they fall in love, and this has been all seen through, and there's no need.
There's just energy coming together, but without the idea of you have to fulfill my life, or make me feel better about myself, and without all the projections. Because if I need you to feel happy about myself, and you do something and I lose control of you, I will start to manipulate, to dominate, to please you. I get frustrated, I'm afraid that you will walk away, I will blame you, and then the whole circus starts. But all these secondary thoughts, they will just disappear and they will just be being together. It's really a huge relief. It really becomes simple. But it's scary for the me, because if you're with someone, the me often wants someone to be with you for the rest of your life, so you know you will be happy with that person. But once it seems that there's no control at all, it could be over tomorrow, it could last a lifetime, or anything in between, you don't know. But for an identified someone, this is no way, I need control.
And a liberated nobody or something.
A liberated nobody.
Yeah, would he then be only attracted to also other liberated nobodies, or would he also fall for somebody who's still living in duality, because he'd be then also confronted with that other person?
I don't know. All I know, I've coached a lot of people over the last years, and I think 90% of the relationships exploded. You look like shit. What happens if someone is used to manipulate the other one with some clouds or with some strategies? Once you see through all my false thoughts and my tips and tricks, I can no longer manipulate you. Because if I try to criticize you, for instance, to make you feel bad about yourself so you will do what I say, say, yeah, but you're always doing this and that. Okay, that's okay if you think that. What? Fight with me! This is not nice! And then people say, yeah, you have to become like you were before. What's happening to you? Or you're some member of a sect, or
the other eye will totally freak out and panic mostly, because it's losing its control over you. And people, I've had girls that when I was dating, they wanted to hear that they were the one, and but do we think that we have a future together? And it's horrible, because I said, right now I like being with you. And yes, but at a certain point I just couldn't say it anymore. Telling the lies to please someone, and then they look for someone else mostly. And they think you have a fear of bondage, and you must be damaging your youth, and then they start blaming it on you again. Yeah.
So can one truly fall in love, say for example if you still live in separation with parents and stuff, I mean, how can I possibly fall in love with somebody else if I know that that's just my projections and it's just my assumptions and all this? Because then I can't, as long as I don't know myself, then I can't truly fall in love with another person, right? Because it would be only my thoughts, my projections, whatever projecting to that person, right? So there's no true love, really, if you live in separation. Can you truly fall in love with
when we live in separation, then the love also becomes conditional. So I will love you as long as you make me feel better about myself or anything. So what you see with this conditional love, we first love each other intensely, and 2 years later we'll be in court fighting with each other and hating each other. This relationship broke up. So that's conditional love. Unconditional love is once it seems that what we truly are, this awareness or this oneness or whatever, aliveness, whatever you want to call it, that's our true nature. That's unconditional love. In this love, people may come on your path and may disappear, but there is no one doing it. So it's just seen as waves. So you will stop blaming people and hating people, because there's no one to blame. It's just what's happening. That's a total different love from the egocentric and conditional love.
Paul?
Yeah.
In my experience, there's also something kind of in between. It's personal, but what I saw when my ex-wife fell in love with someone else. I was really sad. And of course, also kind of anger came. But I really looked closely what happened to myself, and then I saw that the anger was on top of the sadness. So I thought, I want to know the truth in myself. And that was the sadness. So I was sad quite a while, but I couldn't be angry anymore with her. Simply because I saw it is untrue.
Yeah.
And I'm not enlightened or so, but that insight gave me that I still truly love her.
Yeah, you can still love someone even though someone's disappearing out of your life.
Yeah,
but often, especially during the awakening, comes up in these situations that your first reaction might be, so we start to blame, or we feel pain and we project it onto someone else. Mm-hmm. Once this is seen that she couldn't do anything else. This is just life playing the game. You can't blame her.
Yeah, exactly.
So and then it starts to shift.
Yeah.
So there are several phases that you can go through, and of course they're just happening, you're not doing it. Let me just write down a few. What could happen? In the beginning, when people hear this for the first time, it's often confusion. Because we're so conditioned with this idea that we are the doer, that this is you with your free will. And suddenly everything you ever believed in seems to be false, maybe. So I know most of you have been heard about non-duality many times, so this confusion, and especially at a rational level, might be clear at this point. But when you hear this for the first time, it's like, huh?
And then people start asking questions, yeah, but how about responsibility? Yeah, if I have no free will, I can just stay on the couch and not go to work. And these are the basic questions. And what about Adolf Hitler? Yeah, he was also just deafening. What? You are also out of it. This is a phase that is so funny. We talked a bit about it in the interview, the Advaita love. There comes a moment where you feel like, wow, this is amazing. And suddenly, with certain situations, you don't cramp anymore that much. And it's like, wow, this is fantastic. Everyone should know this. And I started bothering all my friends and family and trying to convince everyone that they do not exist. Also in relationships, you start telling your partner, listen, can be very annoying for the other people. I would be at birthday parties. Why did you pick bear? No, you didn't, because in the unconscious brain, I was also telling them that the universe is a holographic thing, but there's actually no chair. It's just molecules, and then there is atoms, but the atom is actually totally empty space. And only when there is awareness, those particles, they will have their form, so it will create the illusion that this is a chair. Then we'd be like, Paul, have a beer. Most people, this is not interesting at all. Then at a certain point you think, okay, so when I zoom in and I struggle and I identify and I blame people, and there's the thought that is wrong, and what is right is enlightened behavior. So when something happens, you're actually really angry or sad, but you suppress these feelings because you have to be enlightened. These people stay calm and nice. I don't blame you for anything. It's okay. And you can do that for 10 times, and then something happens at time 11, and it's like. All the anger is first, it all comes out, and it's like. I've had many spiritual girlfriends or girlfriends who were like,
no, it's okay, I forgive you.
And also people who are really for years with a guru, they see that the guru is just relaxed and he's just and then they start imitating his behaviors, thinking that the imitation is it. So also just happens. As during this process of awakening, there's still a little self-awareness and identification involved. So here the I is confused, here it wants to make other people believe what he does, here it wants to sell a better version of himself, but also in the phase of superiority, it's like, wow, look at what I know. Before I was spiritual, but now I already know that I do not exist. When I do meetings around my area, there's always this one guy who's sitting there in the left. It's not you, but he's always sitting there.
It could have been me.
He's always leaning on his chair like this. And after I've done 5 sentences, he's like, I'd like to add something. And he's got this great one-liner. But after 100 times, the audience is like, shut up! But then the ego is trying to look at what I know. Also, when you go on the internet and look at the non-duality forums or Facebook pages, there they are. And they're really scanning if they can find a word to catch. If I would say, Socrates said, I know that I do not know. And I will say, there is no I! Socrates was wrong! And so they try to see if you slip a word that could be interpreted. Right. And they also always think that this one teacher is the teacher, and the other one is that. So in their eyes, there is always a hierarchy about who is the biggest and the greatest, and etc. This is called the Advaita Shuffle. Before, when you were feeling like pain or something came up, we started buying stuff, calling friends, having all these strategies to get away of it. But now we just use Advaita to suppress the emotion. So you feel it coming up and it's like, it's just happening, it's not happening for me. There's simply a feeling. So there's also a way to put it there. Only works temporary. It also, when I broke up with a girlfriend, and I had this deep sadness in me, and I was just reading Ramesh again and going, oh, you see, it's just happening, you know. You can fool yourself, it's fine. And once it's seen, there will only be the experience of sadness. You will start to cry or anything, that's it. But no more all these thoughts and defense strategies to get rid of it.
I was reminded, I didn't see the last point with the laughter, because sometimes when I said or angry, I said to me just what you said, it's just a body, but it works, but it's true.
Well, once the inside is clear at a rational level, but it's not totally integrated, what happens is that also the rational level is trying to solve the problem, which is fine, by the way. So
it's true also, both.
But what happens, the old concepts come up first, that's his fault, or what did I do, why does it happen to me? And then the other thoughts, the non-dual thoughts, come up with, now wait, it's just happening, let it be, etc. So you can have this huge dialogue in your head between your old concepts and the non-dual drama. But eventually, the drama will decrease and decrease. So in the beginning, this is so recognizable, it would come up and then my non-dual blah blah would go for hours telling the other ones. But in the end, these first thoughts won't even come up anymore. So these are not necessary. But yeah, in the beginning you fight thoughts with thoughts.
And anyway, you're not responsible for those who are coming.
No. You don't choose what you think.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we would all day think about the greatest things. We would never be depressed anymore. Be nice to everyone, always.
And those advisor police, these people with superior.
Yeah.
Have they had they had like an awakening? Are they speaking from their own experience in terms of having had like a profound awakening experience, or is it just something that they understood intellectually, and then they try to pass the judgment upon that?
Yeah, it could be both. Maybe they really saw it at a certain point. Maybe it's just rational. It doesn't matter actually, but. Mm-hmm. Once it's not really integrated, then the ego claims this to be the new toy to sell a better version of yourself. So it's the cloud not being that good enough, and now they got something to prove that they are. Mm-hmm. And they will start fighting other people.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't believe how much email Lisa and I get from people trying.
So there's a huge portion of ego still there, right? So there is,
they can't help it. It's just the ego trying to claim this. And I did the same when I first got this. I attacked a teacher, man. That was horrible. Like, you're an idiot, it's not good what you're writing.
But why? Because one truly thinks that. I mean, that is then the
state
of mind.
The ego claims
to know something and to know it better than someone else. But it's the same as the ego is, look at my car is bigger than your car.
Okay.
It's the same. Well, look, I'm more enlightened than you are.
But is it important to, is that important to be to a real one? The only important thing is what happens in contact with.
Sure. Because let's say the ego of course does nothing, but when there's identification, there's the idea that you have to go somewhere. But this is just pointing at this is it. Whether you're in a struggle, whether you're in love, whether you're in pain, it's just what it is. Well, that is seen in this. There's just what is. But we mostly don't actually live with what is. We live with what is plus blah, 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 blah. Sure. Come up with new ones. Let's use the same color. Sure. Oh, we talked a little about it, about within relationship.
Environnement, you have spoken about this.
Sorry?
Environnement.
In French, it sounds so beautiful. Well, what happens if, for instance, we used to live with all these, I really understand. When you live with all these clouds and thoughts and frustrations, etc., then of course the conditioning of this puppet is slightly different from when there are no clouds. So the conditioning is during this process of awakening is changing. But people around you, they can totally panic. Because they lose grip on you, mostly they think you're weird. That's what often happens. You're a little strange.
No, I don't follow. Environment, I have not heard.
Oh, no. Let's say environment, let's use the other word. Family, friends, or work,
yes.
Colleagues. It might happen, might not happen, but they could just react differently towards you. Some people panic, some people like Ramesh used to say, there will be friends who run away from you because they come with all their stories and they try to make you come up with a new story to make them feel better about themselves. But when you do not fill up that empty space for them because you just can't get into the story anymore, then these friends will run away. And on the other hand, people might come to you and they're like, wow, with you I just can be this, I just can be as it is. It's just so relaxing.
Well, in your experience, can you help a partner that is constantly worrying about things that you would never worry about because you see it's so futile, yes? Do you think you could do something about it?
But it just depends on what's happening. It might be that this thing helps and that someone becomes more relaxed.
Yeah.
But it also sometimes happens that people totally are not into this and don't want to hear the message, and then they struggle.
Because my wife, she's often worrying about many things, and she becomes more relaxed when she's with me. But that's all. She becomes more relaxed, and the next day she starts worrying about all the same things. I don't have the impression that I can do anything about it. I could talk for hours, but talking wouldn't help. You know, it's just worrying coming up on all the time, clouds coming up all the time. And my impression is that the only person that could make something change is she. She could be the only person that could get wiser in a moment and stop or slow down the worrying. But
she can't do it. If she could do it, she would have done it.
So she cannot do it. No.
There's no one in her doing it. She's so just happening.
And then more and more convinced that I cannot help either.
You don't know? You don't know? Maybe someday you'll help, maybe it won't happen, but...
It does help when I'm just listening to her. It just helps. But
when we just listen to people, then the brain will create more serotonin. This is the neurotransmitter that makes our panic emotions calm down and feel more balanced. So just listening to people is enough. And people talk for an hour with the therapist, and they're like, "Wow, she really helped me.
Yeah.
You could have gone to a cafe. It doesn't matter."
But it's just like the chocolate, isn't it?
It is. So therefore, there's nothing wrong with it, of course, but it's the indirect way of liberation, because you try to get away symptoms instead of the source, let's say that way. And for some people, that's what's happening.
Yes. So this is what is going on for years, and it will be going on for years.
You don't know. It could be different tomorrow. Yeah. You don't have any control of it.
You don't have any control.
Because now you want to know if you can help her or not.
Yeah.
And it's or you can or you cannot. Or but it's not enough.
So I can ask many questions, but all one thing. I mean, it's my conflict with myself and my brain. Now, my conflict, what I have. But it's all like when the apples like I give myself answers already when I answer your question. I know your answer, it's random, and when the apples like I will feel it or not. I cannot do much with it all. You know what I mean? No.
Yeah, I do. But you're just happening. So there's no control whatsoever. You're like water that's floating, you will never know which way it's floating. This is all energy with a form simply happening.
But it's like, then it would be, for me, it would be a miracle when you do such a thing, like for so long, and you think, when you really did your best to get to achieve something and it doesn't work, and then it's like, with like my mind still wants to, I'm standing on the against the wall for a long time and nothing, I feel no release.
No.
Sometimes maybe for a moment, like, how can I do more? I'm still in this.
But the awareness
of
seeing that, the awareness of feeling it, the awareness is always present, no matter what's in there. So one day, there's the awareness of feeling good, one day there's the awareness of feeling bad. And we look into the dream about the things that appear and disappear and then cling to it, hold on to it. So what's the point again here? This awareness in which everything comes and goes, that's what we
are. I understand the concept.
Yeah, that's what's happening in awareness, is that there is an understanding conceptually, but there's still the awareness of it. Okay, what do you see here? What is it? The question mark, people say. Yeah. Or people say it's a green line, or it's could be anything. A hook. Yeah. Funny thing, we all look at this tiny green line here while there's a huge wide field in which it is appearing. Yeah. Same goes, this wide paper is this oneness, this awareness that we all are, and in this awareness, forms come and go, feelings come and go, situations come and go, people come and go.
that I don't know when it will happen. Like what I say is a matter of you see it or not. It's like when I'm ripe for it.
Yeah.
I will. No.
Ramana Maharshi said, when it happens, it's mercy. And then just happening.
I mean, when I read your little book, I understand completely, but I'm still in this. You know, yeah. So yeah. When it happens, it happens. I cannot do anything. So.
No. What a relief. So you don't have to worry about it. I'm teasing you.
Yeah, that would be a nice shift. But then you are completely trust when you do when you let it go, then let all this self will and whatever and
yeah. So, but when it's not happening now, it's not happening now. But you're still this. So I'm not a bringer of hope or methods or techniques. I'm just pointing to what is now, and that is people in a room, sitting on chairs, hearing sounds.
I think the frustration comes, I think, where you still think that you can do something to change it. And then the frustration comes in.
Mostly after the talks, people come to me and say, I totally get it. But is there some kind of technique you can...
you still think you can do something
about it. Which is so logical, because we're so young, and even then, if you want to be a good soccer player, you train. When you want to be a guitarist, you play. So in order to become good at something, we do something. That's our conditioning. Then we hear about enlightenment, and we're like, okay, tell me, what do I need to practice? What do I need to do? So it's totally understandable that we think that way. But then this is pointing not to do something, but that there is no doer, that this is happening.
But that's even more, it's more mean. This is more mean.
Totally mean.
I mean, like, what is grace? I mean,
it is mean.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It will never happen because you don't really want.
Jan van de Oer said that. Somehow I do comprehend what he said, because sometimes you see people come in and they're like, well, this is reasonable, interesting, and they just go again. But mostly when people wake up, and now we use the metaphor of Nisargadatta. He said, this ego, this is a coconut, and during your life you get hit on it. You have a crisis, a trauma, every shit you get. And after you've been hit so many times, there is this, it breaks open. But mostly, and I do not want to make a formula out of this, it happens after the system has been, have had many hits on itself, many crises, and then it's ready to, let's say, surrender to what is. But as long as your life is like, I've got friends who totally get this, but they're like, Paul, I've got 5 million euros, I've got 2 houses, I've got 3 cars, and I'm going to buy my 3rd house next month. Why should I worry? There's no urgency for them to do anything. But their life is like, blah, 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 blah. And then, of course, it's me, it's my career, I'm doing it, it feels great. Yeah, understandable. But mostly when things are not so great, you start to look around, look, hey, what's actually happening? Who am I? What is this life? And then you start beginning the search, actually.
But it would mean that the free will would exist then?
No.
Yeah. If you did do one, it will happen.
No. Therefore, I do not agree with that sentence. I do see that people are slightly interested, do not really get into this. But I would never say that if you really want it. You do not decide what you want. Yeah. You didn't choose to be here.
Yeah.
This is just happening. Yeah. Most people don't come here. It's also because normal people can fit in then, but this is not a popular message. And for centuries, this was brought from teacher to student. So this message was never spread anyway. It was Walter Kears, I believe, who was the first who came and brought this message to the Netherlands. So Western people heard of it. Walter Kears. Standards, everybody.
Ah, yes.
And I think it becomes a little bit more popular because from our neuroscience and quantum mechanics, what they figure out scientifically is pointing to exactly the same. So even scientists, they come like, wow, everything is one united field. Everything is made out of the same stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And neuroscientists, they figure out that there is no brain pilot somewhere here. They see there are millions and millions of neurons and synapses moving around. But who's doing it? Who's steering the brain? No one.
I sense that it's not just the clouds which trouble me, but also the sometimes a kind of frightening of letting go the me, letting go the story of me, because letting go the story of me is kind of declaring yourself dead.
Yeah, well, not yourself, but I know what you're saying.
What you believe you are.
We said it in the interview this afternoon that there's also a phase. For years I was like steering the wheel like this, needing control of my life, my career and all. And suddenly it's like, hey, you're not steering. This is like a child's steer. You can do this with who? So, but then I was like, okay, and this was becoming more relaxed. But for a long time I was like having one hand on the wheel, just to be sure.
Yeah.
What if it's not true? And because I was having the idea that if I let go, then ooh, maybe things go wrong. I wouldn't want that. So, and then at some point, it's wow, life's just happening.
Yeah, but you would still show up at the meeting. You would not stay in bed. You would still show up.
No, because I'm not doing this thing. This thing is just doing itself.
Yes.
It's just happening.
Yes.
So I show up. That thing.
Because that's what you do.
That's what's happening.
Yes.
But there's no longer the idea that there's someone in here doing this. I mean, there's only awareness, and right now there's not even awareness of this, there's awareness of that.
Yeah.
So in this one awareness that we are, that what we call you is more present than this.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then when I think about it, it's like, no, I am looking at you, which it's not actually not even my real experience at the moment. It's the experience of you.
Yeah.
And do you remember how it was before the shift happened, before? Do you remember how it felt, basically?
When I was coaching people one-on-one, they would tell me their stories, and then I could, oh yeah, I had that also. So I had to, the memory came back of how I used to struggle with many things. But somehow, when this is becoming so normal, you just don't think about it anymore. Also, Lisa is really bad in explaining what she's experiencing. Just no thoughts anymore above it or about anything. But there's just this. So, and also the memories about the past and how we did it, they will fade away. So maybe we become worse and worse teachers because we're not really getting what people mean or anything.
But Paul, in the metaphor of, you know, the steering wheel, first you think you have the steering wheel, you have control, and you steer to the left and go to the left and you say, yes, I have control, and then go to the right and you say, ah, damn, no.
Yeah.
And then it's like you said, with one hand, okay, relax and enjoy the ride, but still not truly giving up.
Yeah.
But isn't the sentence, relax and enjoy the ride, even a mistake, because who is there to relax? There is no one behind the wheel. That's your message.
Yeah, true.
And that is kind of really, in a way, also frightening me, because that means declaring the death.
Yeah, it's easy to say, okay, I'm not steering the wheel,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's no one behind the wheel.
Yeah, that's different.
This is dying while you are alive.
Yes.
This is the death of the eye.
Is it a painful process?
going through all these phases can be intensely painful,
yes.
Especially because all the old pains and old concepts, they will they get out. And life is so incredibly smart that it just brings you into situations where an old pain is being triggered. Could be an old love, could be a disease or losing someone. And instantly this old pain comes up again.
Mm.
It just wants to get rid of it. And that may take a while.
Is there a lot of fooling of yourself involved? Trying to fool yourself?
Sure. Oh, yeah. And there's also the phase, maybe I should write it down, but the body-mind mechanism is living for weeks like, wow, this is so relaxed. And then suddenly the ego comes like, maybe I'm there. Am I there yet? And this is also the point where people start writing you emails like, now I totally get it. And for weeks it's, wow, this is amazing. I wonder if something could ever get me out of balance again. And then mostly the next day it's like, because there is still the preference of someone to not feel pain, but be enlightened and all this bliss and stuff.
Mm.
So there's identification, so the room is struck.
Did you go through that phase as well?
Oh yeah, I fooled myself.
Several times?
Yeah.
Mm.
Walking around thinking, maybe I'm there now.
And when did all this stop then for you? Or are you, you're probably no longer in any of these phases, or would you say that you are now also in some kind of phase?
I don't know, but I don't care anymore. There's just what's happening. If this thing tomorrow is going to be in a huge struggle, it will be in a huge struggle. It's no longer the idea that there's someone in here controlling anything. So it's just the awareness of what's appearing and disappearing in this. But no longer the idea of a guy having to steer anything. Which can be rude. It was so scary.
So the moment that eye energy drops completely, that is then the moment then there is nobody, and then it doesn't matter also which face you are.
It doesn't matter anymore. You think this is it, but there's no longer this is it, okay, but I have to go from A to B. I have to be a better version. I have to be more peaceful, more calm, more whatever. It's just what's appearing.
And do you remember that moment when your eye dropped completely, or where you've seen through that? I mean, is that like one...
With Lisa, she can exactly remember how and when. For me, it was a more gradual process. And then I do remember that I was so sick and tired of this all, because I had been struggling for 1.5 years, intensely struggling to become there, to get there. And I got so frustrated that in the end I threw away all my fighter boots. I was like, I'm done with this. This is leading to nowhere. I was sick and tired of it, really. And then it happened. And why? This is the story afterwards. There was a surrendering of this body-mind mechanism that it was not able to get it. So it finally surrendered to what it is. It's tricky to say this because you might go home and throw away all the
others.
So but with everyone it happens in a different way. But I see people, when I see them for a long time, all these faces, it could be different for anyone and how long you stay in one, but you're going through stuff. And mostly teachers don't talk about it, they just point to this. But sometimes it can be recognizable, like, oh yeah, I'm still trying to hold on.
But is it possible that you just are stuck in the phases forever? I mean, until the body dies.
Yes.
everything.
Yes. I knew you were going to say that.
But the greatest hope is that waking up is an irreversible process. Once it's seen, it is seen.
Right.
You can never go back and believe in that you're an I. There may be phases where the I energy is starting to claim things again, but after that you will see through it again. So it will, Lisa calls this flip-flopping, mostly call it zooming in and out. It's like it's calm and it's seen, and then you come in a new situation, and you're back again. Well, it's dangerous. And then it's, so this flip-flopping can be in the beginning like a roller coaster, and then it starts to become more calm. So it's just what it is. And it's so simple, just this. And I know teachers then say, you don't have to search, this is it. But before they realize this is it, they search probably for many years. So searching also happens.
May I know what the name of your teacher?
Actually, I have no teachers, but in the beginning I read books of Ramesh Balsakar and his student Wayne Lickerman. Wayne Lickerman.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. I really enjoyed their teaching.
Mm.
Yeah.
Is that Lam Tzu?
Yeah, yeah.
That's funny.
And in the story, how many years did that take?
You never know.
I mean, for you though, you don't know.
You don't care about me.
Well, now it's 30 years. No, you don't know.
You didn't look like you're 30 years.
Well, 38, I started reading when I was 8. Now you don't know, people, just, it might take a couple of years. And for some people, it might take a really long time. I had one guy, we also said it in the interview, he came after the talk, he was busy for 27 years. He had seen all the teachers from beginning till end. And then he was like, can we hug? So maybe something will happen. And we hugged. And nothing happened. No, but you don't know. And but there's still, if you want to know, it's not bad. You're still wanting to control the process. You got it. It's happening.
Well,
yeah.
Maybe you're not a good teacher.
Yeah. Oh, that could be. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe a Buddha would be like to have a relationship, right?
What?
Yeah, maybe I suck. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's so funny with this. If people criticize her, and she sometimes gets these hate emails, like, oh my god, it's like, yeah, it could be. God, you know?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
What does falling in love to you mean? Is it just something which happens, or kind of attraction?
Yeah, falling in love, of course, just happens. And when you're in love, you realize there's no free will, which is like a zombie. They did research now with people who are in love. And what happens is that the nucleus caudalis is part of the brain that is creating value. Like if you see a Ferrari, it has a higher value than you see an old car. They place women who are totally in love under the fMRI scanner. And what they figured out that this nucleus caudalis was totally shut down. It was they would give pictures like, this is Brad Pitt. And their brain would be like, nothing. Johnny Depp. Nothing. Your last one. So there's the brain is defocusing on that. Also, the level of serotonin decreased with 40%. It's like people who are mentally ill have got the same level of serotonin, I guess. And your dopamine level, dopamine is the neurotransmitter giving you passion and being totally enthusiastic about something. It's spinning all around in your head, but what dopamine does, it's narrowing your thinking. So you just can't think normally anymore. So your love makes blind, they say, which is for neuroscience totally true. And why do you think this happened, that during evolution, we could choose out of many people, of course, to make children with. But this, the brain does this trick, it's creating this magic trick on you, so you're totally focused on one person for 1 to 2 years, and in the early days that was enough time to reproduce, then it would fall away, and you would fall in love with someone else to reproduce. So it's just a trick of the brain. But now we take a pill and we don't get pregnant so often, but it's still working the same. So, if my friends, they are not allowed to make decisions the first 2 years when they fall in love, or I will kick their ass, because you just can't think normally. It's mostly you say, oh, we live together and you're married, and then after 2 years the chemicals are, and you're like, oh my god, what did I do?
And the chemicals, are they working the same over there?
Yeah. If I fall in love, it will create the illusion. Mm. But it's not taken personally anymore, and there's no thoughts above it anymore.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, this, when I fall in love with Lisa, I will travel to England like every week. Another ticker, 200 euros. Let's go to Ibiza, 1,000 euros. It's just happening. But there's no longer the thought that it could be different. You just see the puppets doing the same thing. But when you fall in love, you become really vulnerable, because when you're with that person, you totally feel this oneness, you're totally one. And at the same time, there's this intense fear about losing this. So it's pleasure and pain at the same time.
Also, the liberated person.
It becomes like if I'm leaving, sure, there will be pain and I might cry, but there won't be thoughts about that, like, it's her fault, what did I do wrong, what if we stay together for a longer period of time. So this whole struggle stuff, but there will be sadness, and then there will be crying, maybe, we'll see.
Does fear come like you might lose her, or?
No. The fear of losing is not the person. No. If it happens, it happens. And there's no one. Lisa doesn't control it. I don't control it. No one does. There's now gossip about Lisa in the corner.
Is it then also that you have to be certain that everything that's happening is always exactly that what's supposed to happen and cannot be changed?
Yeah. This is the scary part that he also mentioned, one hand on the wheel. Mm-hmm. You kind of believe it, that everything is just happening, but the real deep trust that life is carrying you, it's like... And then finally, it's like falling in like the. It's, I had the sensation of the universe was just carrying this thing. It was like, wow. But before that, was like, okay, that today.
And then thoughts are not necessary anymore, because the thought of the thinking mind that says maybe I should do this or that, that falls away then, because it cannot stay.
Yeah, true. And also when you all in businesses, you have to come up with a solution. The I thinks, I have to find the solution now for this problem, because otherwise I'm not good enough, I'm not controlling it. And it starts to struggle, think all night. And then suddenly there was this deep trust that whatever happens, happens. So it didn't matter anymore. And then what happens is suddenly, whoop, a thought pops up. And the solution is there. But that's really scary for someone who wants to control everything in their palms, especially in businesses. Because they
or total control.
And every artist, every sports player, they know that when they start to think, they're lost. Johan Cruyff said, when you think, you're lost. If a soccer player suddenly starts to think while he's playing, it's gone.
So there isn't really two years, because this, whatever's going to play out is going to play out.
Sure.
Right, so...
You never know.
Yeah, the 2 years is maybe, maybe.
Maybe. To me, it's so nice to hear about this being spoken about in a non-Advaita language. For me, it's just refreshing because it's spoken about on a more relative level, rather than, you know, oh, you're all with like blah blah blah, you know me, or whatever. This is like practical, isn't it?
Yeah, daily life. Yeah.
So thank you.
Well, you're welcome. It's just that. No, you still can say thank you, otherwise it's like... People say, ask me lately, that you sometimes say sorry. I said that, well, if I'm visiting someone and there's this huge antique vase, really expensive, and like, I would say, shit, sorry. And I'm not saying, well, this is just happening.
But why do companies hire you for talks about this?
I really don't know. When I started doing this, I thought, when I start talking about this, it's over. I said, well, then it's over. But I used to give other trainings about changing people and becoming a better version of yourself. But at a certain point, I just couldn't get it out of my mouth. And then I started talking about this.
You were already in the process of giving talks to
companies. Yeah. And then this came, and I just started talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And they started booking me more and more. It's really strange. It's as if they're open to hear something new. Because they have heard all the Emil Rapoports and all the guys said, you can do it! Yeah, they've heard them all now. And now there's a guy, you can't do it!
But the idea was that they get more relaxed in this way, or... The idea is that the people from the company, they get more relaxed by this understanding.
Yeah, every company where I'm coming, it's like they have a cultural problem, the way people cooperate. These are only busy with themselves, with corruption and all, and they're tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now, in this crisis, they first have changed all the structure in the company. But once that is done, you have to go to culture. And that's the step they're doing now, and they're like, oh, how does a human being actually work? So, and for them it's such a shock that our unconscious brain is processing 200,000 times each second more than our consciousness. So what we say is absolutely nonsense, actually. But we take our words so seriously, and then when a word comes out, we make it our opinion. And then we start to debate and try to claim it and to convince other people that this thought is better than that thought, and that's called politics. Some people are tired of it. And also, when CEOs in companies, they wake up, and for them it's really off then in the company, because when they have a meeting, they only hear Stefan Waldorf talking and trying to convince them why they did something and explain why they made a choice and why something went wrong. Then you suddenly see, like, this is all blah blah blah. There's just this.
You know,
I'm an architect, and when I studied architecture, I made a design first, and then I had to give a demonstration of the model for the audience, which was other architects or teachers. And I didn't have a theory about it, so I had to invent a theory. And the more eloquent I brought it, the better my results were. And everybody knew this. And it was just the way things went down there. Designing is a very intuitive thing, and you don't always have a story about it. But then, when you're inventing a theory, it's funny because you can add several angles and they all make so much sense. Then you could write a book about it, you see?
It's also with soccer players, also with the World Championship now, they come off the field and they're like, what were you thinking when you were running for the goal? And they go, well, thinking, I was a little tired, and then I thought, you don't think? And there was this, you know, the great guy from Robin van Persie? There was Daley Blind, he gave this incredible ball, like, and he hit it into the goal with his head. Then he asked Daley Blind, what did you think while you were shooting the ball? And he said, nothing. And I was like, you don't think. There's first shooting, and then there's the story afterwards, like, oh, this is a great goal. And then there's the story, this was my goal. And there's the, look how good I am. So, it's only story afterwards. Yeah. But also with designing, with creating paintings, making music. I mean, ask Freddie Mercury, what did you think when you wrote Bohemian Rhapsody? I didn't think. It is rude. I thought it was even Beethoven who didn't want to sign his own music because he said, this doesn't come from me. I don't know where it comes from, but it's not mine. And Bono from U2, he said, do not interfere with the pen. Let the pen do its work. It's really, I like it. So it's really a strange thought of thinking that you control this thing because you're breathing in and out the whole day. It's just happening. The blood's going through your vein. New cells are being made every day. Wounds are being healed. Your hair is growing. Your digestive system is working. This is all going totally automatically. Yeah, hair's also fall out. It's also gone. You're not doing it.
Right.
But it's all going automatically. And you could say, yeah, but when I pick something up and I drink, this is my action. But even feeling thirsty, it's not what you choose. There's feeling of thirsty. And then when I'm behind my computer working, I often have that I take it and sip. And then after that, I become aware, oh, I just took something to drink.
Mm-hmm.
It's really... So this self-awareness really... maybe for 70% of the day it's turned off. Because when you're busy doing something, you're watching a movie, making love, reading a book, having a conversation, there's no self-awareness, there's only awareness. And then afterwards the eye starts to claim that these were my actions.
After this eye goes away, does one grow in awareness still?
There is still.
Does one grow in awareness? Is it just once realized, it's realized, and that's it? Or is there an expansion of awareness after the me has dropped away? Or?
No. Okay. Once it's seen, it's seen.
It's seen, that's it.
And it's not like you're getting to the next level or the fifth dimension. Life just goes on, and this thing still does stupid things and things that are quite nice and everything in between. But there's no longer the idea that there is a doer doing it. So it's like the white paper looking at what is appearing. Right now you are appearing in this white paper. And now this is appearing in the white paper, and now these words in this hand. But there's no separation between you appearing in it or this appearing in it. And that which is looking through these eyes is the same as looking through these eyes. There's no separation at all.
It's not
with the white paper,
becoming more aware.
No, I know some people say you just like now and then there's an expansion and even some teachers say once you realize you are the white paper, you realize that you are the creator of everything. So then you can create. It's like the ego says, once my strategy works together with the power of God, we can do anything. No, life just goes on, so there's nothing bigger or greater. Or it's just happening, yeah.
And it never happens that you fell again for some moments in the midst?
Well, the last couple of years it didn't happen. And if it should happen, it happens. So there's no fear of that it could happen. You just never know.
And being a parent, I mean, do you find it challenging to raise your son in this ego-driven society? I mean, or do you have a different approach, or are you trying to raise your child in a way that... Well, how do you do this? I mean, without there being an ego, how do you raise your child? I mean, do you, judgments, values, I mean, is that all... relevant,
I'm not raising my son, raising happens.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just the awareness seeing what this thing does, and if he doesn't listen for 10 times, this thing shouts at him. And so that all, it's not like,
could you please pick up your plate and bring it to the kitchen? I would really appreciate it.
It's not that it's becoming like this blissful guy.
I think it's an interesting question, because many people think, oh, so you're trying to raise your kid without the eye?
Yeah.
It's impossible. My son has got a huge ego. He's 10 years old. He wants the greatest shoes that he can buy. And he's like, three girls in my classroom like me. It's so ridiculous. I'm the best in Minecraft in my whole class. And when I bought a new iPad, he brought to school, my dad has got the latest iPad version, you know? So you see that this ego mechanism just wants to explore the world. So that I think with him that will happen. He's going to explore the world, hit his head against the wall a million times, just like his dad. And then we'll see. Maybe someday he'll wake up, maybe he won't. The only difference perhaps is that he does recognize the difference between when he's with his mom or me. That's what he says. Because he saw my book and it was Enlightenment for Lazy People. He said, Dad, what is enlightenment? And I was like, well, that you just don't worry that much. Oh, then you're enlightened. Yeah, my mom worries about everything. And blah, blah, blah. So there it is. Because children, they copy everything you do. And if they see a parent struggling also with all the clouds and projections, it will copy that behavior. And maybe when it sees when something goes wrong, and like, there's not so much panic or anything. Maybe, but I don't know. We'll see what happens with it. But I'm not the kind of guy who tries to raise his kid in the enlightened way. Because also, his ego is a coconut and he has to be hit on it, maybe.
Yeah.
So let him play. The difference is when something goes wrong, I'm not really saying you did do that wrong, you should have done it differently, because that's impossible. But I sometimes mention, okay, this is what happened, and if you do it in this way, you might have a better outcome. So that's the parenting part. But there's no blame on him, like you're not good enough because you made a mistake.
Well, you'd probably not push your son to become an engineer or a doctor or a lawyer.
No, we'll see whether he's dyslexic, just like I am. So,
but if you see that he could do better than he really does at school, will you do something about it?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know what the next sentence is that I'm going to say, and also I don't know what the next thing will be at my witness.
What I do with my children, I try them to have as many sensual experiences as possible. To play in the mud or play outside in the rain, climb trees, things like that, before gathering knowledge. But I don't know if I'm doing right, but that's what I do.
We never know. Our society is so based on that child, when it takes off its diaper, it gets its first test. We call it the Cito-toets. They will test you if you're good enough, and then it starts. And my son is dyslexic, so he's really bad with language, just as I am. And then he's getting a very low value, a 4 or anything. And at school, yeah, you're not good enough.
Mm.
And he says to his family, he said, yeah, my teacher says I'm not good enough, but she doesn't totally get it.
My
Krakow, there was always
standing.
She could, but she did. There's no point.
But also, you can't. If the child doesn't want it, the child doesn't choose what it wants.
Yeah.
And we start to blame the child. You don't.
Yeah, I heard it my whole time. She does not want. She can, but she does not.
It's like you don't like chocolate cake. I'm like, you have to like chocolate cake. You're like, yeah, but I just don't like it. You have to like it. Yeah. So life is so easy. It's the easiest thing in the world. Yes, just happen. That's it. It's incredible. But these things just poof, happen. That's it. Yeah. Also, this is just happening.
It's to the prophecy. Like, I don't sleep that well for a longer time. And then you go, I'm afraid to go to sleep because I think, oh shit, this will be nice. Because I think I will not get good sleep. It is happening.
Yeah.
I think, or is that not cause and effect? You know what?
Well, the brain does not know the difference between reality and fiction. This means if you have a thought of I lost my phone, even that thought that's giving the same chemical reaction in the body as when you really lost something. So the reason why we suffer so much is that when this thought process comes up, our body...
So thoughts really make us do like this,
because the brain does not know the difference. So therefore the people are afraid to fail, often fail, because having the thought makes...
Mm-hmm. But it's like when I think I never will get it, and in my mind, maybe one day, I don't know. So you said waking up is like random, it's like it happens when it happens, it has nothing to do with me. But now you say when I think I cannot sleep properly, I have a bad night.
Yeah.
I cannot get rid of that thought at this moment. Because I get tense because I don't sleep, blah blah blah, you get in a
circle.
Like, even when you think I never will get it, you can get it. But the other thing is, you said it's like no, because the brain thinks you never will get it, so you get tense, and it feels like you never will get it, so you never will get it.
Yeah, but you're not creating the thoughts, and you're not creating the chemical reaction. There's no control whatsoever. So when the brain it's coming up with these thoughts, it comes up with these thoughts. And when the brain drops away these thoughts, it drops away these thoughts. But it's life doing it, not you. So you never know what will happen. You never know.
My God, I like that sentence, God comes to see in the light.
It's more mysterious. Yeah, because even the thoughts filled with fear, they fear that I will never get it, and then you have fear about the fear of never getting it, and it starts building fear on top of fear.
It doesn't matter.
It's just this. And you are not your thoughts. You are not your struggle. You are not your body. So the awareness in which everything goes and the awareness that you are is always present, always there, and everything that comes up because it's just so also being able to sleep, having these thoughts come and go.
Yeah, because I lost a little bit. Like when the idea of not sleeping for a longer time, behind that idea is, I lose it, I get crazy. But I had a period in my life where I had more contact, or maybe it was from my mind, but I'm not a body, so then I could relax more, but I really totally lost that. Also, it was like conceptual maybe, but oh, I'm not a body, so nothing can happen to me.
Yeah.
When you lose that idea, it's only then you can do it with this reflection.
I know what you mean. I had this one girl, I was totally in love with her, and she went out with someone else. And it was an old pain that came up from my first girlfriend ever. And it was so intense, and I was like, and then I was like, I know this. So, and then also the thought comes, it's not her fault. And you start at the rational level trying to make it a little bit more soft, this hard emotions. It only worked temporary for me, because for 5 minutes it was higher, and then because you're trying to hold the ball in the water, and it's like, oh, there it is. Until the point comes that the ball just comes up, and that's it.
But why are we afraid of letting the ball come up in the first place? Why are we suppressing it then? Is that because we're afraid to feel that pain, or why do we keep suppressing our feelings? Is that because they're so painful, instead of just letting them play out and then...
Yeah, first of all, it's a natural thing biologically that we try to avoid painful situations and prefer nice situations. But when something comes up, because we think it's our pain or our fault or anything, the identification with it creates a lot of resistance on top. It's like, oh, I don't want to feel this. And because we think we are the pain. And once it's seen that the pain is like this question mark, it just comes and goes. Once this really said, you are the awareness in which it comes, then there might be a sensation of pain. But no more the attempt to get the ball in the water again. And we're so conditioned, especially in the West, to suppress everything. Also, when you cry, you're weak. That's what people often say. Which is funny, because when we laugh, we like to share the laughs. We're like, wah-ha-ha-ha, and everyone laughs. But once someone cries, it's like, whoa, relax. It's also how we deal with emotions. If we have fun, and let's say a ball comes up, a ball is happiness. And it comes up, and it's like, wah-ha-ha-ha. But when pain comes up, it's like, roll back. It's strange, because we don't do that with nice emotions. It's never like, oh my God, I've been happy for 2 hours. How long will this last? So this one side, we have no resistance, and when it's painful, we fight. That's what often happens. But the same way you experience, let's say, the laughter, so something comes up and it's what? It will be the same way when you feel anger, pain, or sadness, or anything.
Mm.
It's just happening without resistance and without defensive strategies to get rid of it.
So, do you feel like you feel your emotions more fully now?
Yeah, they come up and they come out. So, there's no filter, let's say. But also because there is lack of expectations about how life should be, emotions will become less because there's no one to blame.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be frustrated because this is it. Fear for the future will come as it comes. So as all these clouds dissolve, yeah, the emotions also become less and less in that sense. So then there's just this. And when they come.
Even with the clients? Clients are shouting at me.
And clients shouting at me? Or
no, if you have a client and you get pissed off with your clients, do you tell
no,
them?
No, they get pissed off with me.
Okay.
Most people, they think I'm some kind of therapist. So they sit and in the first half hour, it's like, this is my problem, blah, 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 and then my quarrels tomorrow and my ex and blah, blah, blah. And then after 30 minutes, it's like, so, how are you? Tell me the solution. And I'm like, well, then this is what's happening. And they want to feel better about themselves, that I'm not taking their problem seriously. I'm just saying, this is what's happening. This is it. But most people, they want you to take their old problems seriously. But also, everything we say about the past is actually a lot of crap, because the brain is not capable of bringing up memories and projecting them in an objective way, like they truly happened. Mm. So everything you think about your past is like some fragments, some parts of the puzzle, who are also have a different color and a little dust, and you combine them again and you say, oh, this is my past. And you go to a therapist and say, oh, please, take it seriously. And they will, maybe, but you just don't know. It's great that you don't have to know anything.
But once your client sees that it's great that he doesn't have to understand anything, it's a relief. He should be happy.
For some, and some don't come back. It's like, oh my God. I stopped doing one-on-one coachings now, but for some people, some would only come twice and totally get it. And some would find it a little bit addiction. They would come to me, sit on the couch, waiting for something to happen, which is another disappointment. Because it won't.
And the coaching, was it within Advaita non-duality?
Yeah.
Okay, so they knew basically. I mean.
Yeah, but it's interesting that still people then think that there's something to do or anything.
Okay.
There's a lot of coaching going on under the flag of mindfulness in companies.
Yeah.
Have you got an idea about this one?
Well, mindfulness is more about realization that you are not your thoughts.
Yeah.
The difference between non-duality and non-duality is just killing the I concept, and mindfulness is there is an I who can do something about their thoughts. But a lot of people who did mindfulness then come to non-duality. Because they realize, wait, I'm not my thoughts, then what am I? So, one more question. It's getting like 40 degrees around here. You should have an award for listening to this nonsense for 6 hours today.
Really?
Review.
All people can give me 15 euros for the part, because this goes to the children in India, and the rest goes to the child in London. Can you give me this evening all 15 euros, please?
Yeah.
Okay.
I even had one of the top coaches in America. He emailed me this week, and I looked at his website, and he was asking 1,000 euros per hour, but you could only hire him if you would pay at least $20,000. And I looked at his website, and it was like, oh, you can become a better version, success is a choice, and all that. And I was like, why is he writing to me? And I had my book translated, so I sent him the manuscript. I said, yeah, you can read it. And he said, this is amazing. He said, wow, how could I not see this? And then he wrote like, fuck, what am I going to do? You just can't do it anymore.
It's so double the price.
But not really. This is just me having trouble asking a lot of money about it. I just gave it to orphanages in India because I got it for free. I gave it for free. I mean, this is to me, the Indian culture, it was sharing this.
Mm.
And some people make a lot of money with it, which is also fine. I'm just happy with that.
Excuse me. I am speaking about Lisa. She says that animals have no self. And only humans have a self. So,
yeah, except then for chimpanzees.
The traditional concept is that only human can have mukti, you know his name, moksha. No?
Only human can liberation.
So, people don't know. This is a traditional. Lisa says animals don't suffer. That is the reverse. Traditionally, for instance, Adi Shankara in Vivekachudamani said it is necessary to be human, and also to have nirvana.
You understand this name? With this conception that only animals have no self, so they are already liberated. So. Only humans have a problem. Animals have
no problem. No, animals can experience pain or fear or anything, but they just react instinctively and they don't think afterwards, like, oh, what happened to me? But the amazing thing to me about a human being, we have this self awareness, which is nice, we can communicate, use language and invent computers. It also gives huge struggle with all these thoughts and ideas that we have about ourselves. Okay. But then again, the amazing thing is that a human being is capable of seeing through the illusion. So, because we are the awareness itself, we can see through the illusion and then liberate us from this happening. And that to me is really amazing. It could be the next step in evolution, because there was the first humans on Earth didn't have self-awareness. They were only aware, just like animals. Then, especially when language came in, the self-awareness started to develop. But it came with a lot of struggle, and now we get to the point that...
So there is no problem of metempsychosis, of reincarnation, of samsara, etc. It is only evolution. Individuality, so nobody goes in another body. Is it
true? It's energy at play. It's one way it becomes something else. And even evolution, if we want to end, it's totally radical. Evolution is also a story within this world.
Yes, evolution story, but they change every 10 days, 10 years. This theory.
Well, thanks. Let's get outside.